Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Michael Fullilove. I'm the Executive Director of the Lowy Institute, and it's my great pleasure to welcome you all to this wonderful event space, which has been kindly loaned to us tonight by Bloomberg for the 2016 Lowy Institute Media Award. In particular, let me recognise three of my board members, Stephen Lowy, Jim Spiegelman, and Mark Ryan, our guest of honour, Michelle Guthrie, the judges of the award and our five finalists, several of whom are with us this evening, Jane Anderson from IAG, the sponsor of this evening, Ed Johnson of Bloomberg for loaning us this space, our corporate members, and tonight, in a way, most importantly of all, representatives of the Australian media. Ladies and gentlemen, every day we read your papers and we listen to your programs, and it does sometimes feel like the world is spinning off centre. I'm often reminded of the fictional planet in DC Comics called Bizarro World, in which everything is weirdly invented. Some of you will remember Bizarro World because the meme was picked up in a famous Seinfeld episode called The Bizarro Jerry, where there was a Bizarro Jerry and a Bizarro Kramer and so on. In June this year, the British people voted to leave the European Union, causing the pound to fall to its lowest point against the US dollar in 20 years, and the resignation of Prime Minister David Cameron. And the next day, one of the most Googled phrases in the UK was, "What is the EU?" Then Prime Minister Theresa May appointed the leading exponent of Brexit, Boris Johnson, as Foreign Secretary. Apparently she believes that prolonged exposure to Boris will be as successful in convincing the Europeans that Brexit was a good idea as it was with the Brits themselves. I must say I am very pro-Boris myself. I think he's very smart and he has the great blessing of low expectations, but he's also a lot of fun. Across the Atlantic, we are watching the weirdest election in American history. The mood is completely unrecognisable from 8 years ago when I lived in Washington, D.C. In 2008, the themes of the day were hope and change, and now the themes are anger and retreat. The nominee of the grand old party, the party of Lincoln, Eisenhower and Reagan, is the Donald. The GOP's outreach to minorities has faltered. At the Republican National Convention, for instance, one of my colleagues noticed that there were more speakers with the surname Trump than there were Latino speakers. Luckily, of course, at least Melania Trump's speech was largely written by an African American. So, ladies and gentlemen, it really is bizarro world. In this bizarro world, international events and international developments are becoming more uncertain and also more important to us. Every single day, we at the Institute rely on the work of you and your colleagues in the media to report what is happening in the world. We believe we provide the best analysis in the business, but that analysis can only sit on top of an accurate fact base. And that's why we established this award. We can't do our job unless you are doing your job. Australians can't fully engage with the world unless you are telling them about the world. We at the Institute can't change the economics of the media business, I'm afraid, but we can recognise excellence where we see it. And in so doing, we hope to encourage editors and proprietors, a number of whom are with us this evening, to continue to invest in international news coverage. Let me tell you how the evening will proceed. First, I will invite Stephen Lowy to make a few remarks on behalf of the board. Then we'll have the entree and the main meal. And at the end of that, we will hear from Michelle Guthrie, the recently appointed Managing Director of the ABC. And then I will return to announce the winner of the 2016 award. Let me begin by calling on Stephen Lowy. Like a number of you here tonight, he wears many hats as co-chief executive of Westfield, as a board member of the Lowy Institute, and this week, the next couple of weeks in particular, as chairman of the FFA. And let me say, Stephen, on behalf of the Lowy Institute, we wish the Matildas well against Brazil on Friday. Stephen Lowy.
Thanks, Michael. I guess I'll be the straight guy here, huh? Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of our chairman, Frank Lowy, who's currently in New York, and my fellow Lowy Institute directors, welcome to the Lowy Institute Media Awards. It's good to see so many distinguished business and media figures here this evening, as Michael said before. We are indeed honoured to be hosting Managing Director of the ABC, Michelle Guthrie. Actually, since you mentioned football, Michael, Michelle and I were chatting outside, and she's a big fan of football, so I'm really excited I'm sitting with you tonight. And for the record, the ABC is a big supporter of the Matildas as well, so thanks for that. I would like to extend a warm welcome to our ABC Chairman and Lowy Institute Board Member, and our colleague Jim Spiegelman, and of course my fellow Board Member Mark Ryan, and former Board Member Michael Thorley. It's great to see you here tonight, Michael. Michael's already done this, but I would also like to thank IAG for their generous sponsorship of this very important Media Awards this year. Finally, welcome to this year's awards finalists, most importantly, and of course the judges, who the finalists will really think are important. Monica Attard, Anna Funder, and Peter Varghese, thank you, as well as Mark Ryan and Michael Fully Love. The Lowy Institute was established in 2003 to enlarge the debate on international affairs in Australia. The work of the Institute is to deepen Australian thinking on the world and also to take the Australian voice to the world. In its 13 years, the Institute has now established itself firmly as Australia's most authoritative international think tank, something we're all very proud of. We publish high-quality research and host global leaders and thinkers on international affairs, from Angela Merkel to Joe Biden. And I think last year, Boris Johnson was also here, that time as Mayor of London. As I said before, we're very proud of the work of the Institute and what it does, and we recognise how important the media is to our efforts to broaden and, most importantly, deepen the conversation on international affairs. We have lots of access to news these days, but we need Australian journalists who can identify the Australian angle and spot our national interests. In other words, we need journalists who see the world from an Australian perspective. It is for that reason, as Michael said, that we established this annual Lowy Institute Media Award to encourage Australian reporting on the big international issues facing our future and shaping our future. This is the fourth year of the award. The dinner has become a very important date on the Australian media calendar. These dinners and more are more than an opportunity to recognise the work for outstanding Australian journalists, however. They also provide a platform for major figures in politics, business, and the media to reflect on these issues. In fact, part of the tradition of this award is to have a very senior figure speak to our dinner. In the first year, we had Nick Warner, head of the Australian Secret Intelligence Service, our chief spymaster, who spoke about his father Dennis Warner, a famous war correspondent who reported from across Asia. In the second year, we had Malcolm Turnbull. Malcolm was then communications minister, but of course most of you know he was also a reporter in Sydney and London in his youth. Last year we had Robert Thompson, another former foreign correspondent who became the editor of the Times of London and the Wall Street Journal and of course is now the CEO of News Corporation. This year's dinner continues our tradition of highly influential speakers. Michelle Guthrie was appointed to one of the biggest jobs in Australia. She brings a very fresh pair of eyes, a broad understanding of our Asian region, and a deep experience in the digital media. We are fortunate to host her on one of her first, I think it's your second, major address as Managing Director of ABC, so thank you for joining us, Michelle. In the meantime, please enjoy your dinner, and Michelle will return, and Michael will return, and then introduce Michelle. So thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen, a robust foreign policy debate requires high-quality information and analysis. We should not have to rely on the homogenised worldview of international media organisations. As Stephen said earlier, Australian journalists understand Australia's interests. They bring a particular Australian sensibility to their work. So we believe it is imperative to the national interest that we keep Australian journalists on the global beat. And if that means fewer stories about private schools and house prices, well, sacrifices must be made. We believe at the Institute that the foreign policy debate in Australia can be larger than it currently is. After all, in the 1980s, Australians conducted a lively and intelligent debate on economic reform. We should be able to have a similar conversation in the coming years on Australia's place in the world. One of the people who has the ability to lead this conversation is the Managing Director of the ABC, Michelle Guthrie. Michelle has lived a very international life. She is a Chinese Australian whose parents met in Papua New Guinea. During her career, Michelle has worked for BSkyB in the UK, for Star TV in Hong Kong, and Google in Singapore. In these roles, she developed a deep understanding of digital media. Quite rightly, it is often noted that Michelle is the first female managing director of the ABC, but it's less often noted that she is the first managing director to speak Mandarin and Cantonese. Michelle, in 2014, Malcolm Turnbull, then the communications minister and your predecessor as the lecturer at this dinner, told this dinner that of all the Australian media organisations, only the ABC now has a substantial international presence with 20 Australian and 35 locally engaged staff overseas. A good example of what a public broadcaster should do, in my view. First of all, I might ask the organisers to turn the lights down a little bit. It's a little intense after a couple of glasses of wine. So having done that, and in the hope that you can, in the hope, Michelle, you can still read your notes from the lectern, I'm delighted to ask you to the lectern to tell us how you think about these issues and what the ABC's plans are for covering the world. To quote the ABC's advertising campaign back to you, Michelle, you've got the whole world in your hands. Michelle Guthrie.
No, I'm more concerned about the height of lecterns than whether I have enough light or not. Michael, thank you so much for the introduction, and I'd particularly like to acknowledge the audience, the ABC's chairman, Jim Spiegelman, who is here tonight in his capacity as an Institute board member, and his fellow board members, Stephen Lowy and Mark Ryan. And I'd also like to acknowledge the award judges, Michael, Mark, Peter, Anna and Monica. It's a great honour to be here tonight. I must admit, amid the flood of speaking invitations I received, even frankly before I started, this was the one I most eagerly embraced. Like last year's speaker, who was an ex-colleague of mine, Robert Thompson, I'm an Australian who has lived and worked overseas for an extensive period. And this time abroad may have made me notionally a citizen of the world, but I've always retained very strong links back to Australia and a healthy appreciation of its history, achievements and ambition. And like Robert, I'm very passionate about my home country and optimistic about its future, which I think includes winning a swag of medals at the Olympics, including for the Matildas, I think. My first few months at the ABC has really highlighted the importance of an international perspective in the job. The ABC is an immensely proud Australian institution with an 84-plus year history. However, if it is to flourish up to and beyond its 100th birthday, the corporation can't pretend that best practice will come from looking inward. Our audiences and our media colleagues long ago transcended national borders, and the ABC needs to be truly global in its thinking and its actions. The challenges the ABC is facing are the same as those confronting every media company in the world, and I see a number of fellow media companies in Australia in the room, from the traditional players through to new digital upstarts. Consumers today hold the power, instantly demanding information and entertainment from anywhere in the world. They demand a seamless audience experience and expect a constant improvement in that experience. At Google, my previous employer, that meant not being complacent about just being a search engine or information service. And at the national broadcaster, it means being able to deliver content that is distinctively ABC content, regardless of the platform on which it's being carried and consumed. It means finding new ways to connect with audiences that ensure that the ABC and its charter are relevant to their lives every day. I remain to be convinced of the long-term prospects of some of the new wave of media companies. They offer quick hits for their target audiences via sharp attention, you know, short attention-seeking news items and clips or listicles that generally lack substance. It could be argued that their content is as shallow as their revenues. But every action has a reaction. I think that there's been a welcome flight to quality as producers across the globe realise that the best way of standing out in a crowd is to provide content that connects, inspires, and enthralls people. In today's media world, instant news has become something of a commodity. Audiences have immediate access to a range of sources, some questionable, some not, on almost every major news event. This means that in the news space, the key to longevity is in the value add, that undeniable extra that a news organisation can bring to the conversation, such as the investigative piece, the in-depth analysis, the local angle, the incisive and thought-provoking debate, the forensic interview. So allow me to beat the ABC's drum a little tonight. We've seen a great deal of value adding at the ABC in recent weeks. The Four Corners investigation into youth detention, the precision of the ABC's election night call and a coverage of the marathon count that followed, the accountability we have sought from our newly elected politicians through rigorous questioning on programs like Q&A, Insiders, AM, RN Drive and Breakfast, 7:30 and across our local network. This is really the ABC at its best, informing, educating and entertaining. Investigations like the Searing Australia Shame put together by Cara Meldrum Hanna and her team on Four Corners that prove the adage that real news is revealing what someone else is trying to keep secret. And in the ABC's renowned election pundit, Anthony Green, we're seeing the audience eagerly share the ABC's 25-year investment in knowledge and trust. Quality journalism at the ABC is not confined to our shores. In recent weeks, the ABC has demonstrated the benefits of its international commitment with extensive coverage of the big issues like Brexit, the deadly terrorist attacks across Europe, the Middle East and the US, and the US primaries that have now morphed into a Clinton versus Trump showdown. The facts speak for themselves. At a time where other media companies have whittled away their overseas reporting capacity, the ABC has maintained a strong level of investment and service, so that despite the pressure of overall budget cuts and the need to better align our internal news investment, the ABC dedicates more than $13 million annually to overseas reporting, with a footprint unmatched by any Australian commercial operation. Our 26 correspondents and camera operators are based amongst our 11 international bureaus, with major content hubs in London, Washington DC, Jakarta and Beijing. This structure allows our journalists to travel within their region to compile stories, while the ABC's smaller offices in Tokyo, Bangkok, New Delhi, Port Moresby, Nairobi, Jerusalem and Beirut ensure that our coverage is well-rounded and covers the globe. This investment by the corporation in overseas reporting and analysis is against the trend of a massive contraction in international coverage, depressingly catalogued by the Prime Minister in his address to this forum a couple of years ago. And this trend has not abated for reasons we're all familiar with. No doubt because of this, the ABC has increasingly become the destination for big breaking news events. The Village might have become global in the digital world, but it still requires our presence to bear witness and to provide audiences with knowledge of events as they occur. The audience's appreciation of ABC News is evidenced in our audience figures. So on News 24, our coverage of the historic Brexit vote resulted in a daily reach of 1.3 million as people moved in and out of the rolling coverage. Excluding the federal election peaks, this was our biggest audience in 2016. Again on News 24, our rolling coverage of the terror attacks in Nice on 15th of July reached a million Australians, and there were over 200,000 video plays on the ABC News website and 12,345 from the News 24 live stream. For a dedicated 24-hour TV news channel, these are impressive figures, testament to the ABC's dogged pursuit of the task of engaging people in international issues. This core responsibility of our news division to help Australians both here and abroad make sense of a world of rapid change and immense complexity will remain a priority. This is one area of comparative advantage that the ABC must exploit to the benefit of all Australians. Of course, that does not need to be done solely through conventional programming. As we've seen with Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert in the US, a sense of humour and non-conventional approaches can be just as effective in educating and informing audiences. Planet America on ABC News 24 supports this approach. Tonight, we recognise journalists whose work as foreign correspondents, analysts and commentators has heightened our understanding of events overseas. The Lowy Institute Media Award is the preeminent prize in this field. Previous winners have excelled at their ability to cover breaking world events, and just as importantly, in an era where anyone with a smartphone or a Twitter account can call themselves a journalist, to get behind the headlines and to provide valuable insights for audiences at home. As the judging criteria makes clear, topicality and quality of writing and broadcast are not the only benchmarks. The finalists are also assessed on their ability to bring attention to a new international issue or idea, or to re-examine an existing issue from a new perspective. This sets a very high mark indeed. The ABC has strong links to the Lowy Institute, and last year we were delighted to have Michael deliver the ABC's 2015 Boyer Lecture Series. The first lecture in the series was delivered in Shanghai, marking the first time in its history a Boyer Lecture had been given overseas. Dr. Fuller Love's series embodied everything that Lowy Institute stands for: intellectual rigour, the challenging of ideas, and setting out Australia's place in the world. Monica Attard is another judge of tonight's award with a great link to the ABC. Monica is best known for her compelling reports in 1991 on the collapse of the Soviet Union, although that understates her work elsewhere. Monica is doubtless the only person here who can claim to have ridden on a tank through the streets of Moscow in her pajamas while delivering live reports on one of the biggest global events of the 20th century. The roll call of ABC foreign correspondents is a roll call of Australian journalism itself. At the considerable risk of omission, I'll refer as an example to the memorable work done by Chester Wilmot and John Hyde during the Second World War, Mike Carlton and Tim Bowden in Vietnam, Paul Lockyer and Paul Lynham, and their successors like Sally Sara, Zoe Daniel, Sophie McNeil and Phil Williams. And a special mention to another Chinese-Australian, Helene Chung, who broke barriers to become the first non-white reporter on Australian television and, as Beijing correspondent, the first female posted abroad for the ABC. It's interesting that for all the focus on me as the first managing director to achieve dual first, being both female and of Asian descent, Helene was paving the way in 1974 before I entered high school. Helene and others I've named are just some of the many ABC journalists who have packed their passport along with their notebook to make their mark overseas. We thank them and their talented colleagues for their endeavours past and present. In the 3 months I've been at the ABC, Monday nights have become somewhat of a ritual. When my diary permits, and currently I'm averaging about one in every two programs, I head down to the Q&A studio to get my weekly fix of participatory democracy. Q&A, with its many moving parts, is a pivotal program for the ABC. It's here that politicians and thought leaders are held accountable for their actions and policies, where ideas are vigorously debated and where the public is provided a chance to ask probing questions. In full flight, Q&A is one of the best examples of the ABC acting as a public commons, a place for people to converse and interact. Many of you here tonight would have tuned in to Monday night's stimulating debate about the US presidential race, featuring an erudite panel including the former Foreign Minister and New South Wales Premier Bob Carr, American author and satirist PJ O'Rourke, and non-resident Lowy Fellow Lydia Khalil. I had the advantage of witnessing the quips and insights from both the control room and the audience on Monday night. I came away with a reinforced notion of how important it is that the ABC continues to commit the resources, energy and expertise necessary to raise these issues and connect them to a domestic audience. It's far too easy to claim, as some have done, that the instant access to a world of information makes obsolete the need for the ABC to invest in its own coverage and to devote the time, energy and money to explain complex global events. Yes, it's possible to go to the New York Times website for the latest Donald Trump outrage or to the Financial Times for the next Brexit development. However, context and relevance are important. What the ABC does through its investment in programs like Q&A and its international reporting infrastructure is to provide Australians with a continuous rich flow of information and analysis, explaining the relevance of events and issues. It can link continents and through its array of programs delve deeply into policy. Hopefully this contributes to a far more informed domestic debate about security, defence and other matters. It's also important that acting as a town square, the ABC does its best to bring international perspectives to its own debates. I was struck from the very first Q&A I visited as managing director how knowledgeably visiting US writer and another non-resident Lowy fellow, James Fallows, spoke about Australia's budgetary issues and how he could frame the policy debate in a far broader global context. It's a truism that journalists and diplomats work in the same circles, and the good ones share many of the same traits: curiosity, the ability to connect with people, and to distill and communicate complex matters. Actually, I first wanted to be a journalist and then I wanted to be a diplomat, and here I am running the ABC. Maybe it's a little bit of both. What both professions share is a familiarity with disruption related to digital technology. As former Canadian diplomat and blogger Daryl Copeland has pointed out, diplomats and journalists are now only two sources feeding into an increasingly crowded infosphere. Copeland noted that for both, long-standing advantages over the sourcing and control of information have disappeared. In the age of mass travel and the exponential growth of internet use, more people are able to exchange more data and ideas with increasing speed. Control of information is a very lively and timely topic. We've witnessed attempts by authoritarian governments to suppress free information and engaging in a technological arms race with their own citizens over access. We also live in a world where hackers are able to penetrate cyber walls to extract data that even democratic and open administrations may prefer was kept secret, as you can tell from the census furore of this week that shows that even routine government tasks can be affected by cyber attacks. The challenge for journalists and diplomats is how best to master the new technologies. And amid the confusion and often deafening noise from competing echo chambers, best target their audiences. The ABC Charter refers to a two-way information flow. It is specific about the need to not only inform Australians of that which is happening in the world, but also to transmit to countries outside Australia programs that will encourage awareness of Australian and an international understanding of Australian attitudes on world affairs. There's also a separate remit to keep Australian expatriates, an ever-increasing and influential group, informed. These are responsibilities that the ABC takes seriously despite the loss of the Australian network contract in 2014. The ABC's status as an independent public broadcaster is its most potent tool. Its reputation for delivering news and information without fear or favour is what makes it such a highly regarded institution, not only in Australia, but within the region. The ABC International Division provides a strategic focus for the corporation's international charter obligations. The division's development of the Australia Plus service with its digital syndication and partnership strategy has significantly increased the ABC's penetration in Asia and the Pacific. We're closely considering ways in which to increase our reach in key markets of China, Indonesia, and the Pacific. I've actually just returned from Jakarta, where I helped launch the Window on Australia program, which is a month-long showcase of Australian stories broadcast by Indonesia's largest media group, MNC, and published on two leading online sites, Detik and Kompas. This project involves Indonesian journalists travelling to Australia at our cost to cover Australian stories through Indonesian eyes, providing increasing awareness in areas like travel, education, food and even religion, with the focus of the journalists recently on the celebration of Ramadan in Australia. This is a very novel but effective way of reflecting Australia and Australian perspectives to an international audience and to, frankly, our most important neighbour in Indonesia. In the Pacific, where there are quite different audience needs to Asia, the focus is on exploring new distribution channels to reach people and an expanded content offering for the region that would include English and Pidgin audio content and an enhanced Pacific Beat news service. Again, a globally attuned ABC will make best use of its partnerships with international broadcasters to service its audiences across different platforms. Each day, the ABC produces an amazing amount of rich content, and my aim is to ensure that we use the best of our multi-platform prowess and the content that's carried on it to better service our overseas audiences. Now, there are obvious rights issues to work through, but my goal is to develop a responsive and customizable international service utilizing the best of our apps, our catch-up service iView, and our main online site, abc.net.au. This would allow an international view of the ABC to be curated and for international audiences to personalize that service to meet their individual needs, such as for in-language content. Such an initiative is a great example of the ABC delivering on its charter and in the process contributing to the soft power push that bolsters Australia on the world stage. I think that many here tonight would agree that even in these security challenged times, or perhaps because of them, the ability to provide one's country's reputation, values and skills, and to promote the exchange of ideas and information is paramount. In large parts of the world, there appears to be a political and public tendency to retreat inwardly, or as The Economist noted last month, to pull up the drawbridge. Perversely, the inward pressure is being matched by an external drift to the use of soft power tools to achieve national ambitions. Having spent a large amount of time overseas and seen the sums that are being invested in media outreach, it is perplexing to me that we're punching well below our weight in the exercise of soft power. The Russians, the Chinese, and some Middle East nations like Qatar are taking megaphone diplomacy to new levels, utilising social media and older media channels to spruik their cases. But even our close neighbours like Korea, Singapore and Japan are investing big sums in promoting their nation's values and achievements. The aggressive spending by some nations has given rise to what many are calling a demographic deficit in global communications, an ever-increasing shortage of impartial news and information to counter the spin and self-promotion. I note that last year, the British government actually reversed its strategy to take money from the public broadcaster, acknowledging that it needed to increase its global reach and to promote democracy through accurate, impartial, and independent news reporting. The BBC World Service was given an additional £85 million a year to develop key services in key markets, including Russia, North Korea, the Middle East, and Africa. German broadcaster Deutsche Welle last year launched a 24-hour English language news channel and dispatched new correspondents to Bangkok, Lagos, New Delhi, Nairobi, and Cairo. Now, before anyone interprets this as a push by the ABC for more funding, I simply say that Australia needs an informed and comprehensive debate about how best to position itself in this increasingly competitive world. In a speech at a recent innovation conference, I pointed out that the creative side of the innovation agenda is often overlooked. Coming from the creative sector, I think it's important that we focus on the great work that is performed by Australians in this space and how that can be used to good advantage. Too often, our efforts to showcase creativity are disjointed and focused on the short term. Soft power requires a long game and good strategic investment. I fully endorse Dr. Fully Love's statement in his Boyer Lectures that we need to sharpen our tools for dealing with the world. I think the Lowy Institute has done a fantastic job in living up to its objectives to deepen the international policy debate in Australia and to give Australia a greater voice on the international stage. I'd like to think the ABC, through its charter actions, is doing the same. Thank you.
Yes. Now, there's a microphone. Thank you very much, Michelle. Thank you, Michelle, for a speech that I thought was really rich in detail. Thank you very much. Michelle's agreed to take a couple of questions from the audience, so please get your questions ready. We probably only have time for two or three. Let me kick it off with a personal question, if I can. You have family connections to Papua New Guinea. And Papua New Guinea, as an example, is a country that whose history is intertwined with Australia's. In 2013, AAP closed its bureau in Papua New Guinea. AAP was, of course, a source for much of the news that news organisations around the world took. Now, Eric Torchek, your excellent correspondent in Papua New Guinea, I think, is our, well, certainly Australia's own foreign correspondent, only foreign correspondent in Papua New Guinea. How does that make, what do you think about that as an internationalised Australian who has lived an international life? What do you think about the shrinking and the thinning out of Australian coverage of the news? I'm not asking you so much about what the ABC is doing, but what does that do to us as a country?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's a great question, and I don't have a great answer for it in the sense that, you know, I'm entirely aware of commercial constraints that news organisations face. And I'm also aware, you know, as a public broadcaster, our own budgetary constraints. But I do, you know, feel that at least for the ABC, and I also think the importance of Papua New Guinea to Australia, it seems to me that, you know, there needs to be a focus of effort. We can't be everywhere. But I do think Papua New Guinea, and not just because of my personal connection, but it's our closest neighbour. Indonesia is our closest neighbour, but it is a very key relationship that we have on the international stage. And it's hard to, you know, tell stories about the connection if you're not there. I did learn from my time at in operating in Hong Kong and Singapore, but really spending most of my time, you know, three and a half weeks normally out of the month, actually out of those places and on the road in Indonesia, China Indonesia, India and China were kind of my three primary markets when I was both at Google and also at Star TV. That you can't, expect to understand a country by just visiting from time to time. I really do think that you know, the only way you really get to know a place very well is to spend a significant amount of time there. And I think the investment of resources is absolutely what's needed to do that.
Thank you, Michelle. Mark Colvin. Mark, if you could just wait for a microphone.
Hello, Michelle. We haven't met. I'm looking forward to meeting you properly. But in the early years of the Second World War, there was a titanic battle between No. 10 Downing Street and the BBC over what you've phrased as the issue of soft power. And Downing Street and the Defence Ministry wanted the BBC to tell the world exactly what they wanted it to hear. Australians like Chester Wilmot, whom you've mentioned tonight, British reporters like Richard Dimbleby, and the BBC hierarchy fought that very hard. And they interpreted what you phrase as soft power very much in the frame of the BBC would be much more credible if it told as much of the truth as it was able to do, regardless of what the government wanted it to do. Obviously, within the parameters of security, it was wartime after all. So within that framework, what do you understand by soft power? Because as an announcer, as a reporter, as a broadcaster, I don't want to be the voice of Australian government. I want to be the voice of Australia.
No, absolutely. And you make a great point. I think that the best thing that you can where you can show Australia at its best is showing something like Q&A or showing some of our sort of very rich and critical debate, because that's how you demonstrate democracy in action. It isn't about propaganda. I mean, that's not what I'm advocating in any way, shape or form in terms of soft power, but I do think that being present is important, and having a voice is important. And that doesn't mean, being the voice of the Australian government, but I do think it is engaging with the region, absolutely.
We have time for one more question. I have a room full of journalists. Let me call on Tori Maguire.
Or you can ask me later.
Tori Maguire from the Huffington Post.
Michelle, I'm the editor-in-chief of Huffington Post Australia. How do you expect your argument about soft power and a global outlook to go down when you have to appear before Senate estimates in the current future Senate makeup after this election?
Yeah, I mean, I genuinely believe that the way in which we deliver on our charter obligations and the way in which we engage with Australians is engaging with Australians about issues of, you know, domestic issues, but also explaining the world to Australians. I think that is absolutely part of our charter obligations. So it does seem to me that that engagement with, on an international stage, and particularly with the Asia Pacific because of proximity and interdependence, I think is even more critical. I also think that the way in which we prove our value is around doing things that others can't or won't do. It is showing that distinctiveness. I was really kind of talking about with a kind of, you know, with a plethora of information, actually having something that is very specific for Australians, and really sort of tells some of those stories is, I think, completely critical. And the results that we've seen on some of our recent international stories shows that the public is very much interested in those.
Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in thanking Michelle for giving a very substantive and interesting speech that really drove home the themes that animate this award about Australia's international connections and our need to study international developments, and also for generously taking our questions. Thank you, Michelle Guthrie. Ladies and gentlemen, we've come to that part of the evening in which we announce the winner of the 2016 Lowy Institute Media Award. When I was appointed Executive Director, we decided to establish this award, and I'd like to acknowledge my board member and friend Mark Ryan, whose idea the award was and who has been its biggest supporter ever since. The winner receives a lovely trophy designed by Dinosaur Designs and a $20,000 cash prize, which is one of the richest in Australian journalism. We respectfully ask that the winner find time in their calendar to write a couple of articles for the Institute's excellent digital magazine, The Interpreter. I think if you work that out on dollars per word, it's about the best rate that's going these days. So thank you again to IAG for sponsoring tonight's event. Thank you, Jane. Let me mention again that the list of previous winners of this award is very distinguished. In 2013, Fairfax's John Garneau took out the inaugural award for his reporting from China. 2014's winner was the ABC's Hayden Cooper, who won for his foreign correspondent report on Peter Grest's trial and conviction. And last year's winner was the Australian's Paul Maley, who won for his incredible reporting on foreign fighters. Ladies and gentlemen, this year, as every year, we brought together a distinguished panel to judge the award, comprising journalist Monica Attard, author Anna Funder, former DFAT Secretary and now Chancellor of UQ, Peter Varghese, AO, Lowy Institute Board Director Mark Ryan, and myself. So thank you again to all those judges. Let me also thank, I'm trying not to bury the lead too much, but let me get in the thanks while I can to my colleagues at the Institute who've worked very hard over the last 6 months on this process. Thank you to Anthony Bubalo, Louisa Fitzgerald, Tara Pienaar, Andrea Pollard, John Gooding and Alastair Davis for your contributions. The award is judged on the criteria of topicality, influence, originality and quality. This year, the judges settled on 5 finalists, and they are as follows. Amanda Hodge of The Australian for her coverage of Malaysian Prime Minister Najib Razak's multi-million-dollar gift from the Middle East, and her exclusive interview with former PM Mahathir Mohamad, in which he called for foreign interference to oust the Prime Minister. This reporting had a huge impact in both Australia and Malaysia. Secondly, Eric Torchek of the ABC for his coverage of the politics of Papua New Guinea, Australia's closest neighbour. As the only foreign correspondent in the country, Eric's reporting is crucial to understanding the the bilateral relationship. Thirdly, Jewel Topsfield of Fairfax Media for her coverage of the Australia-Indonesia relationship in the wake of the Bali 9 executions and the Cash for Turnbacks allegations. Fourthly, Philip Wen of Fairfax Media for his reporting on life in China under Xi Jinping and the thickening links between China and Australia. And finally, The Age investigations team, in conjunction with the Huffington Post, namely Nick McKenzie, Richard Baker, Michael Bachelard and Daniel Quinlan, for their joint investigation into allegations of bribery between Western companies and Middle Eastern officials facilitated by Unaoil, which sparked official inquiries in multiple countries. This story was an example of Australian journalism with a truly global scope. Ladies and gentlemen, the judging lunch was long, it was pleasurable, and in the end it was decisive. And I'm delighted to announce that the winner of the 2016 Lowy Institute Media Award is Jewel Topsfield of Fairfax Media. Australia has no more important relationship than that with Indonesia. Jewel's reportage has illuminated life in that country under President Jokowi, as well as the high points and the low points of our bilateral relationship. Congratulations, Jewel. We really appreciate you being able to join us from Jakarta with 24 hours notice. Let me invite you to the stage, if you would, to say a couple of words. Ladies and gentlemen, Jewel Topsfield.
Thank you very much. I feel incredibly honoured and overwhelmed, particularly given the calibre of the other finalists. I feel quite undeserving standing here, so thank you very much. I guess I'm shamelessly house proud, and one of the things that thrilled me about tonight was to see that five of the seven finalists are from Fairfax. And obviously Fairfax has gone through, as we all know, incredibly painful times over the last year. And the fact that despite these straitened circumstances and the inevitable job cuts, that we're still seeing five of the seven finalists, I think really highlights the fact that Fairfax really does care about international issues, particularly in the Asia Pacific region. So I've got a vested interest, but I'm very grateful. I think there's this condition, and it's a terrible malady, and it's called correspondent paranoia. And basically it involves waking up at 3 a.m. every morning thinking, what am I doing? I don't know what I'm talking about. All my editors are silently kind of scheming to bring me home. When are they actually going to tell me that I've got the sack? How are they going to broach this? And poor Greg Earle, I rang him to actually ask him for a number the other day, and it turned out to be on the couch with Jewel while I had kind of told Greg about all my woes and I didn't really know what I was doing and what should I be focusing on. And he said, and I was talking specifically about, obviously, we're operating now in a 24-hour digital-first system, and I was saying I'm not sure what my priorities should be. And he said, Jewel, I think you're suffering from something that foreign correspondents have always throughout time suffered from, which is just paranoia. So it is incredibly gratifying to get an award like this and to know that all the things that you throw into the vacuum, you know, that some people are reading them and appreciating them. So thank you very much. I guess there's a few people that I would like to thank in particular. One is that I think personally that the great unsung heroes of correspondence, particularly in non-English speaking countries, are the fixers. And I had never really understood the nebulous role of a fixer until I went to Indonesia. And Fairfax is lucky enough to have two fabulous women, Karuni Rompies in Jakarta with me and Amelia Rosa in Bali. And fixers, when I realised what their role involves, fixer just doesn't cover it. They are researchers, they are interviewers, they are cultural consultants, they are encyclopedias on the country. They play such an extraordinarily important role. And Rooney and Amelia are the sort of women I'd take with me on a tiger hunt. They are feisty, they are funny, they are forensic, they are incredibly loyal to Fairfax. They've been with us for many years. And frankly, I wouldn't be standing here without them. And it was last month I was covering the latest round of executions in Indonesia, in Cilacap. And it was the most incredibly gothic night. It was biblical in terms of the storm that we had. It was raining. There was so much thunder we couldn't hear the gunshots. It was about 1 a.m. and Amelia and I were there and we didn't have a clue what was going on. The TVs were all reporting that all 14 prisoners had already been executed. I didn't want to report that, obviously, because we couldn't verify it. And I get a call from my colleague, Rooney, who I didn't even know was working. And she said, it was 2 a.m, and she said, "Jewel, I've just spoken to the lawyer of one of the men on death row, and we think he's been spared." And that completely then changed the night. And subsequently, we realised that, in fact, 10 people had been spared. So to have Rooney and Amelia and people like that is extraordinary. And one of the things that I'm personally very proud of is that I was speaking to Yeni Wahid, who is the daughter of one of the former presidents of Indonesia, and she actually worked as a fixer for the Sydney Morning Herald for Louise Williams. And one of the great things that she did, they were nominating for a Walkley Award for their coverage of East Timor. And she insisted that this fixer be included in the team, which was unheard of at that time, and they won. And Yeni was telling me that she became the first Indonesian to win a Walkley. And that was really fabulous when I was applying this year, because although the Walkley conditions actually stipulate that people must be Australian citizens, we were able to, and Michael Batchelard, my predecessor, helped me with this, point out that there was an example of an Indonesian who had been part of the team, and we were able, subsequently, the Walkley committee allowed us to include them on our ticket. And we won, which was fabulous because Walkley, but also I was so pleased that we could acknowledge the role of the fixers. I guess also I would really like to obviously thank Fairfax. And when I applied for this job, I was on maternity leave still. I had a 9-month-old son and my husband had a stroke and nearly died 6 months earlier. And so I'd basically been a carer for 6 months and I thought, well, this is something, you know, I've got plenty of time to research, I'm not working, and this is something that, you know, I can do for myself. And anyway, I really didn't think that I had a chance at all. And frankly, if I'd been on the interviewing panel, I would have thought, what could possibly go wrong? You know, one of the busiest postings, husband nearly died, 8-month-old baby, who else are we interviewing for this job? And to my kind of eternal amazement, they gave me the job. And I want to thank in particular Darren Goodsir, the editor-in-chief of the Sydney Morning Herald, who's been such a supporter of me for many years now. And I guess I just hope that this award is some way of me thanking Fairfax for that leap of faith.
Well, Jewel, thank you for a speech that was as intelligent and colourful and memorable and humble as your reporting. I think I should congratulate Darren Goodsir for sitting on that selection panel that appointed you. I hope I'm not revealing too many secrets that the night of the judging panel, I had the great fortune of calling Jewel, and she just got off a plane in Bali on her way to a counter-terrorism conference, because that's why most Australians go to Bali, obviously. And she was having difficulty making out what I was saying, and I think she was having difficulty processing it. It was very charming, and when I told her there was a cash prize of $20,000, she asked me to repeat it, and she then said, I thought you were going to say the certificate is in the mail. No, the check is in the mail, Jewel. So congratulations again. You're an extremely worthy winner. So ladies and gentlemen, please join me again in thanking Jewel Topsfield. That concludes the formalities of the evening. Let me thank again Michelle Guthrie for her remarks. Let me congratulate again all the other finalists. Let me thank you all for joining us. We still have dessert. Bloomberg, Ed has told me from Bloomberg, we've got the run of the place all night. So given that you're journalists in the great tradition of journalism, we expect you to stay with us for a couple of nights. Enjoy your dessert and your drinks. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen.